Happy Bitcoin Wednesday, freaks. It's your host, Odell, here for another Citadel Dispatch, the live show focused on actionable Bitcoin and freedom tech discussion. Before we get started, I want to do a huge shout out to all the freaks who continue to support the show and keep it ad-free and sponsor-free. You guys make this show happen. So thank you for supporting me with Bitcoin. The easiest way to do that is CitadelDispatch.com/donate. You can donate via on-chain or Lightning. You can leave a message attached to your donation. You can attach your Twitter account to it if you want to climb the leaderboard, or you can donate anonymously. You can also support the show using Podcasting 2.0 apps. You simply search Citadel Dispatch in one of those apps, press the subscribe button, choose how much sats per minute you think the show is worth. It streams directly to my node. You can also, through Podcasting 2.0, do something called Boostergrams, where you attach a message to a set amount of Bitcoin, and I read out the top four Boostergrams from the last episode. Last episode was yesterday, and we already have a bunch of freaks supporting the show, so thank you, freaks. We have Eric99 with 50,000 sats saying, great rip. We have @CypherHoodlum with 9,420 sats saying, could you include the date of new dispatches when you announce them? Tomorrow morning is very confusing for my time zone. Live rips hit different. Also, when Noster live chat. I always try and include the time zone, usually in UTC as well. So apologies if I missed that somehow, but I will make sure that it happens in the future. We have Ride or Die Freak 8 Mithrandir with 8,888 sats saying V4V, value for value. Thank you, sir. We have @Daniel with 7,777 sats. Thank you for a great discussion. Then we have @Kano with 2,500 sats saying, thank you, Odell, for always reminding us not your keys, not your coins. You saved this freak's Bitcoin from the BlockFi rug pull. Much love. Please always RHR. So important for the freak's health. No pressure. Thank you, freaks. You guys are why I do it. You guys are why I come in, week out. People forget. They think this is just a code project. They think this is just a software project. But ultimately, this is a movement of individuals. We all have to stand up together and move forward. Otherwise, nothing will change. With all that said, I want to get right into the show. It's an important one. It's an emergency rip with good friend Ray Youssef from Paxful, the co-founder of Paxful. How's it going, Ray?
It's going awesome, brother. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here with my fellow freaks. I've always been a freak, and it's hard for us freaks to feel at home, but this is a bit of respite. I'm indulging it, so thank you.
Well, yes, thank you for joining us. Unfortunately, it's on somber ground, somber reasons. It appears you guys have shut down Paxful as of yesterday. I don't know where you want to start. I guess just a basic, when did you launch Paxful? It's been years.
Yeah, July 15th, 2015.
Wow. Okay. End of an era. So Paxful was a way for people to buy and sell Bitcoin, P2P
from each other.
Yeah, from each other. It was really massive in the emerging markets in the global South. We saw it in Africa and Latin America. There was a lot of usage. And you made the difficult decision of shutting it down yesterday. So where do you want to start on this?
Well, first, you know, as somber as the news is, brother, you can see the smile on my face. I feel great, actually. I feel like a huge weight has been lifted off my shoulders personally. And there's a lot of reasons for that. So first off, Paxful was awesome. It's a great experiment. It did two things. Number one, and the biggest thing that it did, was it proved that Bitcoin could be useful for real use cases where people need it most, meaning the global South, Africa, India, Southeast Asia, Latin America, Central Asia, etc. That was huge. You know, in a world where the bulk of the narrative is dominated by speculation and price, Paxful proved that it was purpose over price. So I'm very thankful for Paxful for doing that. And I'm thankful for the people that made Paxful. They're the ones that really did this. I just listened. I watched and I learned. And I gave them what they asked for. And then they built this thing. Remittances, payments, etc. They proved it all. Particularly the peoples of Western Africa. I have to give a big shout out to Nigeria. Their hustle and business acumen is absolutely legendary. And I learned everything I know from them. So that's a huge win right there. And as peer-to-peer grows, and believe me, it will, and we will get into that, the narrative will come into proper like focus. It'll be not about speculation. It'll be about real use cases and how Bitcoin is the clearing bearer for all world commerce, the promise of unstoppable free markets, the one thing that will make it even. That was beautiful. The second thing it did was itself. It made these places for Bitcoin and allowed us to give up. How this happened, how do you get Bitcoin in, get money out? Those broken systems, corruption, etc. No one wanted to take that challenge up. You know, 8 years ago, I started saying, hey, you know, Bitcoin is really good. It's going to blow up in Africa and the global south. And everyone laughed in my face and said, ah, these Africans only make $2 a day. They're not going to be able to figure it out. What need do they have for it? Fast forward to the future, Nigeria is leading the entire world in Bitcoin adoption. So how did that happen? It happened through a hack. And I am a hacker. I've always been a hacker. I've been a serial entrepreneur for over 20 years right now. Started in 1999 when I got my first computer. Yeah, I'm a geek, but I started late. And basically what I did was we had to get Bitcoin into Nigeria, right? And I focused on Nigeria because it was tremendous acumen there and hustle amongst the youth especially. And I saw that when I went there and I also learned about the problems that they had. So I had to get Bitcoin into the place. How did I do that? I showed them how they could hustle gift cards, just you know, get paid with a gift card for any work they're doing, virtual assistant work, whatever. And then they could take that gift card and sell it to someone in China for a discount, but they would get Bitcoin. And $60 million a week started to flow through that one corridor between Nigeria and China. And from there, it spilled out to the rest of Western Africa, the rest of Africa, and the rest of the world. So that one hack accomplished a tremendous task. Fast forward to now, what happened that Paxful had to go down? So I gave two reasons on the website. I said they're regulatory reasons, right? And that is a big part of it. You know, Paxful had 1/4 of its team was compliance. Out of 400 people, we had over 90 people that were doing compliance.
Wow.
So we were backwards to please these regulators. But as you guys can see, there's really nothing you can do that will appease these people. They are not about inclusivity. In fact, American compliance is utterly racist. They'd want to know, what's up with these gift cards? What are these Nigerians doing? And they weren't just viewing things with a bit of suspicion, which is understandable. They were viewing things with actual disdain and apathy. And, you know, it's kind of like the Matrix, right?
Yep.
You know, you talk to these people and you say, yeah, I'm trying to help people and help humanity get ahead. And you see, it's like some kind of alien took them over and they become Agent Smith, right? And they are completely against you. Like, where the hell did that come from? So you guys know Coinbase is not even able to appease these people, right? And look at them. And we've been as compliant or more compliant than Coinbase. And if you look at my Twitter feed, you'll see every single day, brothers and sisters are complaining, why were my funds locked? You know, you guys have no, and you didn't even give me a reason. You suspended my funds for no reason. American compliance, every transaction has to pass through a filter. And the threshold for something being suspicious is very low, right? Everything is considered suspicious. And we have to suspend those funds. We don't touch them. Ray's not on an island sipping martinis. You know, Ray drives a Mini Cooper, believe me. But we have to suspend those funds and we have to do all this paperwork, process these suspicious activity reports, and it can take months. And then we have to wait for the regulator to get back to us and say, hey, can we release these funds? And they often take their sweet time. And meanwhile, a CEO, even a CEO, cannot overrule a compliance decision. KYC is another huge pain in the butt, right? How do you KYC someone that has no ID? We can't. How do you KYC someone in Nigeria that only has a paper voter registration card if they're lucky, which none of the KYC providers can read? This is a huge problem that plagues all fintech companies from serving the global south. And Uncle Sam doesn't care. You know, we spent a fortune. For example, you might have heard early in the year, we released $2 million of suspended funds. To release that $2 million in suspended funds, we spent $6 million in compliance fees to process all of that paperwork. Can you imagine? Can you imagine that? Spending $6 million in compliance just to release $2 million.
That's insane. That's the game.
It is insane. It makes, like, we had to pull out of Venezuela, not because serving Venezuela is technically illegal. They're not OFAC. But the compliance requirements would be absolutely impossible to serve them. It would make it completely unprofitable to do so, and actually extremely dangerous to do so. And the same reason we had to pull out of Russia, and now it's decided to pull out of everything. But besides compliance, and by the way, I could talk about this compliance vector for a while, but just putting it out there, guys, you know, local Bitcoins didn't shut down because of crypto winter. They ran a far lean operation than we did. They had like 30 people and did half our volume, right? So you can guess what their profit margins were. They shut down because they're a Finnish company. They were doing business with Iran. They were, you know, they were on the way out. The writing was on the wall. They were living on borrowed time. And indeed, the DOJ has been training local prosecutors in America to bust peer-to-peer traders. You might have heard about how this one fellow who did a trade on local Bitcoins for $1,000. He sold $1,000 worth of Bitcoin to a guy for a bank transfer to his wife's bank account. Apparently, that dude he sold the Bitcoin to was involved in some lottery fraud several hops down the line.
Right.
And the man tried to get him and his wife for 35 years. Thankfully, they had children, right? Thankfully, he only served 18 months in a correction facility. But that's the kind of environment we're dealing with. I refuse to put people's freedom and their funds at risk. So that was an ethical decision and a business decision and a regulatory decision. But there's another facet to all of this. And that's this lawsuit that I got hit with. And this is where it gets really juicy. And I'm really debating how much I can share here. Because, you know, I take a lot of legal liability personally doing so, but fuck it, man. Stuff never bothered me. If you're a true freak, you don't care about those kinds of things, right? So my co-founder sued me and the company. And the litigation was so nasty. It was full of mudslinging all on his side. Everything you can imagine. He hit us with a surprise lawsuit on MLK Weekend.
And so is this your co-founder?
Yes.
Who is? Yes. Okay. Continue. Sorry.
Yeah. My co-founder. His name isn't even worth mentioning. No one really knows who this guy is.
Yeah. This is the first. I never heard the name before I saw the paperwork.
Yeah. He's a degen. Total degen. All this stuff with Celsius, you know, that was all his doing. He tried to get all of these scam tokens on Paxful, and I had to just veto. It's been a constant battle for the past 5 years with this guy. The ideologies just did not merge, you know. So I had to undo all of those mistakes. And it wasn't just that. The guy destroyed our conversions by like 10x. Unheralded incompetence. Absolutely insane. And he was fired for that on extremely toxic behavior. And then he got angry because he wasn't getting any more money out of the company. This guy has two yachts, sports cars. He's living that kind of life, you know, bottle service. He was a nice guy in the beginning, but then he completely went off the wall. He couldn't handle, you know, success. And he lived a lifestyle that just, it wasn't congruent with the values of the company or myself. You know, I spend my money on helping people, on giving back. He wasn't about that kind of thing. And so he was fired. He came back and he sued the company. He sued me. He even sued our general counsel, and that he retired out of the, just resigned out of disgust. His litigation was so nasty that all of my chief executives threatened to resign. And in fact, they did. This Friday, we lost all of our chief executives, except for me and one other guy. He even accused me of running a completely fake compliance an engineering operation. He said he said the engineering company was an underwear company and it was just an embezzlement operation. He said, nothing's going to happen if all these engineers go. Ray is lying. He's actually said this on a board meeting. And so he had no engineers, no compliance people, no security personnel, no chief operating staff. And we went, it wasn't more than 24 hours that passed on the weekend before our wallet went. And I had to hold another emergency board meeting because I'm sitting there with with no staff to run a company like this. And I couldn't legally shut it down at that point or even say anything because there was a status quo injunctive relief by the courts where I couldn't do that. So I held an emergency board. I said, look, no one can get their money right now. Deposits, withdrawals aren't working. We have an emergency situation here. All our engineers quit and they didn't even want to work with us anymore after you dragged their name through the mud. And finally, he abdicated. He said, okay, yeah, please do whatever you can. And I had to scramble and beg our engineers to come back in whatever capacity I could. I paid them out of my own pocket, offered to pay them double to come back and rectify the situation. If you look at my timeline right now, there's still people's send-outs that are being delayed by up to 24 hours. I haven't slept for 36 hours trying to get everyone's money pass through this pipe. This is major clogs right now. But this is the situation he put us in. And I told the board, hey, there's no way we can continue to run an operation like this. It's not ethical. All we need to do is secure our wallet, make sure everyone can get their funds out, and suspend operations. It is a criminal act to be running a company when we cannot secure the integrity and security of the system. And he advocated, and I managed to do this. I still took legal risks to do this, but it was done, thankfully. And the story gets really juicy, guys. He's gone to the press, and he wants my side of the story. So you're going to be seeing some crazy stuff come out. But basically, I've been fighting a war to keep everyone's money safe. And this is what I had to do, and it's a huge blow to lose Paxwell. But honestly, I couldn't feel better. And I think the future is going to be very bright, guys. And I'm happy to tell you what's next. But first, before I continue monologuing again for another 30 minutes, maybe golf questions.
Well, we have a lot to unpack here. Definitely appreciate the transparency. There's a couple people in the comments that have funds that were apparently frozen and compliant for compliance reasons over the last 6 months, 7 months. Yeah. What can they expect in terms of that getting their funds back?
Yeah, so that's a huge problem. So right now, you know, we have people's funds that have been held up to a year. Some people's funds that have held up to 2 years, actually. And there's various reasons for that. For example, we use Chainalysis. I don't approve of that, but that's part of the game in America. Paxwell is a Delaware corporation, right? So we have to run all this stuff. Everyone's funds that are held right now, they are not being held for TOS violations. I can't sort of that. All those funds, they're all held for regulatory and compliance reasons. A CEO cannot overrule that. So some of those funds, we have no choice. If someone was dealing with Noratel or something, was an Iranian exchange, their funds were suspended. We have to wait for the regulators to come back and say, okay, you can give these money back. We bug them every week. Our chief compliance officer is the last chief left in the company besides me. He bugs them every week. They don't get back to us. There's nothing we can do. I can't overrule that decision. Our compliance team that has been clearing all of these, filing all this paperwork to unleash these funds, they haven't been paid. They're owed almost $6 million right now. My co-founder refuses to pay them. That's the truth. So I don't know what's going to happen with those funds, guys, because the way it's looking right now, there's going to be a custodian that comes in and manages Paxwell and liquidates the assets. But my hard line there is that no matter what, the wallet has to stay up. And I've cut these referral deals with other companies where we can monetize the outgoing traffic and get passive revenue to Paxwell solely for the purpose of keeping our wallet and website up so everyone can extract their funds. And that's why I've been preaching self-custody for so long, because I knew this day was going to end. So that's my situation. I don't want to resign as CEO right now, because if I do, he'll try to come in and be interim CEO and bring in his own engineers. And that for me is a massive red line, because look, it's a custodial wallet. It doesn't matter who has access to the cold wallets or hot wallets or whatever. Any engineer can go in and change a Postgres database balance update and they can withdraw all the money. So I'm hanging around to make sure that doesn't happen until this custodian gets in and hopefully the situation can be handled. So that's why I'm around. I really don't want to be CEO of Paxwell. I don't want to be on the board of directors. I don't want to be an employee. I honestly don't even want to be a shareholder right now. The only reason I'm here is to make sure that things go well. The ship gets completely to harbor and everyone's funds are safe. But I encourage everyone right now, take your money off of Paxful. It's not a place that is for trading. So it's not a place you should be keeping your money in any capacity.
Yeah, I mean, that all makes sense to me. I mean, you've spoken at length about the compliance hurdles you've dealt with publicly many times. You've been very outspoken about it. I mean, I've had private conversations with you as well, where you're very passionate about the compliance side. I still remember to this day, Riga 2019, when you were on stage. I don't know if you remember talking about aircraft carriers. And I was, you know, I've always been historically very anti KYC policies and whatnot. And you've always, you know, brought that discussion to the limelight, to the front. I think it doesn't really help people right now to say not your keys, not your coins. But that should be the number one lesson with any kind of custodial failure. That you can't avoid this if you hold self-custody of your funds and you don't trust a third party. Would you agree that hopefully, however this ends up, those funds that are frozen, are they segregated? Like are they actually exist? Like, does that money exist?
Of course. Yeah, of course. It exists. Segregated. The regulators decide when those funds were freed up and the custodian will get all those funds held up. But then, you know, people will have to go to this custodian to get their money, which honestly,
probably never going to get it.
Well, it depends on Uncle Sam at that point.
Right. If you have to depend on Uncle Sam, you're probably never going to get your money.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've made it. Yeah.
I'm just being straight.
Yeah, so am I, bro. And you're probably right, especially because a lot of these people are not Americans.
Yep.
Right? That's the big part. These people are Africans. They're you know, they're Indians, etc. They're from the global south. I see a lot of people here messaging and they don't believe anything I'm saying, but it's the truth, guys. A CEO cannot overrule a compliance decision. Otherwise I go to jail. I can't just say to unlock these funds. You know, I'd love to do that, but I can't. We unlocked $2 million of funds at the beginning of the year. That took a tremendous effort. That $6 million in compliance costs that could have gone in my pocket, but it didn't. So that's all I can say. If you don't believe me, I'm sorry, but that's all I have.
So there's a couple of things to unpack here. First of all, before all of this went down, you guys announced that you were refunding people that lost money on Paxful Earn, which I guess used Celsius on the back end. Did that still proceed? Like, that still happened?
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone got their money. Yes, it was 8.8 Bitcoins. It was all credited to their Paxful wallets. They've withdrawn the funds. That happened, yes.
Got it. So is this... This was more of this internal politics situation that shut down Paxful more than on the compliance side. Am I correct in that? Like, that it is, I mean, because when I first saw the news, I thought maybe it was more of a regulatory attack on Bitcoin and trying to shutter on ramps and off ramps. But this seems like it's more like it was a stewing internal conflict that kind of finally hit its tipping point.
Yeah, the stewing internal conflict has been going on for the past 3 to 5 years, actually. But in November, me and my co-founder actually agreed that we had to divest from risky markets, because that's the advice we got from all of our compliance people, our legal counsel, everything. So we agreed we'd divest from gift cards and risky markets like Nigeria, China, and India. And because that would destroy our bottom line, that's where most of our revenue came from. We agreed to dissolve the company and end things on a note gracefully and to dissolve by March. But then what happened? He came back and he sued me because he realized if we did that, he wouldn't get his 9-figure exit. And that's even in his court filings. Right. They believe the company is a lot less valuable, which is true. So he sued me because he wanted to renege on his decision of the board. And that's why he made all these crazy accusations against me. And that's why we're here. So we actually made the right decision in November, at a board meeting, but he wouldn't get his big payout. So he decided to sue, spend, you know, millions in legal costs for himself, for the company, and put the entire operation in danger. That's what he did, because he wanted his payout. And it didn't work out for him. He still came to the decision that we had to make, and everything he did actually, you know, furthered the action that we took in November, which is quite sad. But we could have had a much more graceful wind down, but we didn't, because he was greedy.
So, yeah, I mean, first of all, to the freaks in the audience in live chat, by the way, you know, I tried to keep my intro very short on Dispatch today because we had a dispatch yesterday, and also because it's an important conversation. So I was just trying to cut as much of the bullshit as possible. But you guys are what makes this show unique. I don't know of any other show that streams the live chat directly into the stream. So I consider you guys the host as well. And I see that a lot of you are frustrated. I want to be very clear. This is all going to be fought in court. There's going to be many, it's going to be a long court process. I think you can tell by Ray's face that he's aware of this. So a lot of this stuff will come out, and courts will handle it how courts handle it. But I think it's important that we have an open discussion here now today while all of this stuff is going down. And that's what we're doing here. So Ray, I mean, I don't know how to pronounce it, but there's this new app. Is this the No One's app? Is that how it's pronounced? Or is it the Nunes app?
No One's. Some people no say ones. Nunes. Not yeah. Nunes. Not that.
Okay, so the No One's app. I have tons of respect for the three founders that are involved with this. And so there's some kind of agreement there between you and them. I don't really quite understand it. Can you walk us through that? I mean,
yeah, just a referral agreement. So we can't serve these markets. So we gave them a button, and we gave, you know, Bitnob a button too. We'll be adding some more services there, like Yellow Card, maybe one other, just to monetize the outgoing traffic that we can't, you know, earn revenue on. So it brings a passive revenue stream to Paxful. So Paxful can keep its wallet up for another 2 years. That's my mission. So if these funds do become available, because Uncle Sam says, finally, okay, here you go. It becomes available, and people can just withdraw it from the wallet directly instead of having to go through some lawyer. That's what I'm trying to do with this money.
Right, because when we see stuff like Mt. Gox and all that stuff happens, like what it's been like, I mean, it's not funny, but it's been almost a decade and people still haven't gotten their money, right? So I guess that's what you're trying to avoid in that regard.
Yeah, exactly. And so all the held funds on Paxful, I think it's about $900,000. That's how much money is still left held on Paxful in these accounts. So it's not like, it's a lot of money, clearly, but it's not some, you know, it's not hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right. So a mutual friend, Yusuf, is one of the founders of No One's. He's a founder of Built with Bitcoin, a massive Bitcoin charity that you have supported heavily. I believe Bernard Perrault, who's a good friend of mine, is also part of the founding team, and also Nicholas Gregory from Commerce Block Mercury Wallet. Those are three guys that I have tons of respect for. So I was actually really excited when I saw the announcement for their app yesterday. It seems to try and fill a similar role that Paxful filled, which is this idea of a marketplace for the Global South where they can exchange between each other. How does that trend? But is like, am I correct in that trade history and all this other stuff carries over between the two apps? Like, how is that?
Not trade history, but people's reputations will be imported there. We also signed a deal where their KYC information would be imported as well, so we didn't have to re-KYC with the integration. So that's all. They can just continue trading there. But No One's is a lot more than just a peer-to-peer marketplace. It's also a messenger. In fact, it's primarily a messenger. So it's a global super app. It's a super app for the global south. That's really what it is. Think WeChat, but for Africa, India, China, Latin America, the 6 million, considered no ones by the world, right? But the no ones can join together and become some ones. And that's the whole prerogative there. The company has a very unique remit. The goal is 1 billion citizens in the next 7 years by 2030. By citizen, I mean someone that is daily engaged. That is a massive goal. Paxful had 12 million users, and about 2.5% of them were monthly engaged. So how do you get a billion daily engaged users? Bitcoin is not enough. Crypto is not enough. Even fintech is not enough. The only way to do that kind of daily engagement is with communications and media and peer discovery. And that's what they'll be doing. The plan is to onboard the masses, right, in a way they understand. And it makes sense. Look at how Zapping on Deimos, on Nostr, is working out so well. So all that can be taken to a whole new level. And it's an open platform, right? On Paxful, we would ban people's accounts for trading off escrow. Right. We'd ban them for having multiple accounts or using the same IP.
Right.
That's not going to happen anymore in this project. All the wrongs that Paxful had are not going to happen here, especially because it's not an American company. So there won't be any of this bullshit.
Where is it based?
It's based out of the United Arab Emirates, out of Dubai.
Got it.
Yeah. So there's not going to be any of these blocking and suspending of accounts anymore because Uncle Sam doesn't like you or how you trade.
But it still uses Does it still use a custodial wallet?
Yes, it does. It uses a custodial wallet, custodial escrow, and the order book is still centralized. Now, here's where it gets interesting, right? And this is the big announcement that I'll be making in a few weeks. Actually, it might drop next week. It's going to be a white paper. It's going to be called the Pax Civ Kit. The Civ Kit, meaning Civilization Kit, is the next level on top of Bitcoin. There's no token. The token is Bitcoin. And it's basically the next level after Bitcoin, because I don't consider the Bitcoin project complete unless we have a way for unstoppable free markets where everyone can have their own decentralized, unstoppable Paxful. This white paper will be dropping next week, God willing. It's being worked on by a bunch of geniuses. Nicholas Gregory has, you know, a team of absolutely brilliant young masterminds on this. One of them is considered the Satoshi of Lightning. And the premise is it'll be released in three phases. Phase one will be the marketplace, and it's built on top of Nostr, meaning the order book is just on a Nostr relay using a certain protocol. And if anyone can start up their own Nostr relay, and they can have whatever offers they want. They can have offers for gift cards or bank transfers like Paxful or Binance P2P. They can sell goods or services. They can sell whatever they want on their commodities, anything. And no one can stop it because the liquidity is on their own relay. And if they choose to do a trade with each other from their non-custodial Lightning wallet or any non-custodial Bitcoin wallet, it all happens with Lightning escrow contracts. To be specific, hash time lock contracts or discrete lock contracts. So no one ever takes custody of those funds. Essentially, it's an unstoppable free market where anyone can trade anything with anyone else.
And so this is separate of No One's app, or is this...
This is separate. This is an open source, decentralized toolkit.
Right.
No One's will be building on top of it, and I hope everyone...
They'll be interoperable with it, basically, right?
Yeah, ideally. They'll be building... No One's is just a brand that's being built on top of Bitcoin and the Civ Kit. And I hope everyone will build a brand on top of No One's and Civ Kit. I just had a chat with CZ, and I asked him, hey, when this thing hits... I hope you'll build something on top of this too. I want as much competition as possible in peer-to-peer. Our only chat right now is peer-to-peer. The shitcoin casinos and all of that, that whole dialogue is diminished. And there is so much room for growth, especially in peer-to-peer, that we need a toolkit that everyone can build on. And I won't just be releasing, you know, I'm not just supporting the decentralized toolkit. I'll also be building progressive web apps and giving them out open source as well for the front-end user experience. And also for the marketplace admin as well. So everyone will have every single resource they need to spin off their own unstoppable decentralized marketplace, just like Paxful. That is my legacy right now.
Yeah, I mean, that all makes sense to me. I mean, most people don't realize with Binance that, you know, people think of Binance as a centralized exchange. Where they've found real success is the Binance P2P product. It's absolutely dominates throughout the global south. And just in general, as we see more crackdowns, as we see more banking relationships get frozen and closed, we're going to move to more P2P world, and we're going to move to a more circular economy world where people spend Bitcoin instead of sell Bitcoin, and where they earn Bitcoin instead of buy Bitcoin. That seems very obvious to me. Nostr as an interoperable communication protocol seems like an ideal fit for this kind of market connection behavior, right? Or market making behavior. I could see a lot of different front end services essentially become interoperable behind the scenes using something like this, something like a Peach or a Hoddle Hoddle or a No One's app, all communicating across each other using Nostr, which was kind of the original vision of TBD out of Block. But Nostr is just out there right now. It's iterating. It's a free and open source project. And we're seeing, you know, massive development happen. So maybe it just happens on Nostr instead. This all makes sense to me. I mean, that's really interesting.
We're talking closely with the guys at TB Dext, especially about the decentralized IDs with the Ion framework and help us. So to be able to do this thing, to put the certificate together, we're going to need bits and pieces from all these different projects. And I'm talking to everyone right now when we're researching everything, right, to make all this come together. Phase one, the marketplace. Phase two, to be a Lightning wallet that is actually mobile friendly, which is extremely chatty, challenging because, you know, Lightning is a very chatty protocol. And how does someone on an Android phone in Zambia, you know, keep up to date with all of these Lightning nodes all over the world, right? There needs to be some architecture in between that is still decentralized. And maybe it's not custodial, self-custody 100% of time, but just enough that this system can actually work, right? So it's a Lightning wallet that is mobile friendly plus decentralized IDs. This is important. Look, people complain about KYC all the time.
Yep.
We have to make a distinction between KYC, which is a centralized thing, and identity. Identity is the foundation of banking. If I'm going to sell you some Bitcoin to buy a car or whatever, and you're going to send me some money from your bank account, I might want to know who you are, just in case my bank comes back to me later and says, who is this dude? I want to make sure you're not a drug dealer. I'm going to ask to see your ID. But you don't want to give your ID to some company. But if you ask, if I ask to see your ID and you want to do a trade with me, maybe you'll show it to me. And that's where decentralized IDs come in very handy. We need KYP, know your peer. So the mission is to replace KYC with KYP. If we have that, then peer-to-peer can truly grow. Because peer-to-peer is an essential part of identity. You know, at Paxful, we're a centralized service. We have to KYC everyone.
Right.
But sometimes within a trade, traders will ask to see each other's KYC as well. That part is good. The centralized part is not.
Well, this is why it's important that the reputation carries over to No One's, right? Because the reputation, like KYC, fuck KYC, in my opinion. KYC is a tool of control and surveillance. But reputation is essential in free markets because you need to know if the counterparty that you're interacting with, you're trading with them, like you need to know what their reputation is. Otherwise, they might scam you, right? And that's the dichotomy. That's the dilemma, right? That can be to a degree technically mitigated through different means, whether that's decentralized identifiers, whether that's Nostr pub keys, trade history, that type of thing. But I mean, to me, the big issue here is the custodial wallets, right? The custodial wallets represent a central point of failure. They represent a central point of failure. They're obviously where the pressure happens in terms of any kind of regulatory pressures. They're the issues where we have right now, like we see the people in the comments saying that their funds are frozen and they want to withdraw their money and they don't know why and it's completely opaque and they have no fucking clue what's going on. That all stems from custodial wallets. I wonder, and most people in the world, particularly in Latin America and Africa and the developing world, everything is mobile first. They use mobile phones for everything. Lightning is not quite there yet on the mobile side. And I wonder if really it should be different flavors of multisig, like different flavors of on-chain multisig. And I really should be having this conversation with Youssef or Bernard or the guys at No Ones, but I haven't talked to them yet. And I'm like, to me, that's where the future is going. Like HODL figured that out. Peach figured that out, like multisig, non-custodial, kind of escrow situations where you have two of three multisig. What, the centralized party holds one of the keys. Would you agree with me on that? Or like,
yes, we need to have non-custodial wallets and they need to be easy to use. That's it. However, which way make it easy to use right. the keys. Look, the truth, running Pax will, you know, less than 5% of the user base even uses 2FA.
Yeah.
Let that sink in for a moment, right? All of our market makers, they use 2FA because they keep a lot of money on there, but try convincing a normal person to use 2FA. It's a huge pain for them. They don't want to do it. And in fact, so many of them, you know, it just keeping their fund safe is extremely difficult because they use the same password for their Paxful wallet as they use for their email or every other website yeah. that they commerce site in Africa, right? And like literally every single website or service in the global south has been hacked. Its database has been leaked. And that's where all these credential polling attacks come in every single day. So making this easy is the challenge. It's a tremendous challenge. HODL, Peach has done an amazing job. I hope that No Ones will adopt this and do even better, especially with the CivKit.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. These are hard problems. These are hard problems people don't realize. I don't think people really appreciate like the actual problems people have on the ground, which is, like you said, like you can't even assume someone's going to have a secure password. Like if you make that assumption, you're going to have a bad time. So, I mean, we have more questions in the chat about these frozen funds.
Let me answer some of them. One guy here, he said, Delicious Deli. Where do we get more detail why the U.S. government froze the account? Do you provide subpoena? The answer is you don't. Because according to American compliance, we're not even allowed to tell you why we froze your account. Right? That could be considered us warning you. Yep. So you get all these robotic responses from support, because that's all we can say. And people ask me what happens. All I can say is a CEO cannot overrule a compliance decision. I can't even really tell them that they were frozen because of compliance. Because then they're going to get some, you know, it could be considered warning them. The truth is, people might have received a Bitcoin transfer from someone that got some money from someone that got some money from someone that bought some weed on, you know, on the dark web, you know, last week. And because of that, this sends us a warning, right? And because Chainalysis sends us a warning, oh, this guy was connected to this guy that was connected to this cluster five hops down the line. According to our compliance policy, we have to freeze those funds. And we can't even tell you why. Does that sound fair to you? That's the reality. That's the reality. And you want to blame me and you say I'm running off with your money? I'm not. I'm not running off with any money, man. I'm driving a Mini Cooper over here, bro. I sit in a restaurant over here and do my work. I'm not a criminal. I understand why people are mad. And honestly, that's one of the reasons why I feel so good right now, is I don't have to deal with this bullshit anymore of Uncle Sam not even allowing me to communicate like a human being with our customers. And these aren't people, these aren't billionaires whose funds are being locked up. These are people that it might be their whole life savings.
Yep.
That's just one of the reasons. I'll go into another reason. A lot of people that made mistakes. They've sent, you know, BSC or Tron to ERC-20 or this to that on the wrong blockchain. Some of them sent a lot of money, right? Why can't we, like, Ray, you stole my funds. Is how we're, no, those funds are still on the chain. I don't know how to get to them. Our engineering team, we'd have to, you know, do a whole project, write a bunch of scripts, start harvesting all that money going. We're not set up to do that, especially now that we don't even have any engineers. So, no, I am not running away with your money. It's still on the blockchain. You can check it there. You know, these are the operational realities on the ground. You know, people, you can look at my timeline. It's really painful when people come out here and call me a crook. I'm not taking anyone's money, guys. These are the operational realities. I don't know of any. I would love to, you know, get a bunch of engineers in here, run the script, and go harvesting all of those mistakes on the blockchain and give that money back to the users. That was actually part of the plan before I lost all our engineers. Sorry, I don't know what to say, guys, but I am definitely not stealing anyone's money. This is just the pain of dealing with an American company. In fact, anyone listening here, I encourage everyone not to start a company based in America and not to serve American users. So us Americans are shit out of luck. Too bad, man. Time to get a new passport, homies. That's what I say.
I mean, I can definitely confirm that what you said about not being able to tell users why their funds are frozen is absolutely true. I know many people who run regulated Bitcoin businesses, and it's the very unfortunate reality. It's quite frankly, it's absolute bullshit, but that part is completely true.
It's criminal, honestly, but it's not me that's criminal here, guys.
We have Brent Droid asking in the comments, did you accept deposits while withdrawals were frozen?
I mean, your deposit, if someone sends money to your Bitcoin address and your account is frozen, how could we not accept that? Are we supposed to?
Oh, that's what he's referring to. Because withdrawals are open right now?
Yeah, withdrawals are open right now if your account is not frozen, but your Bitcoin address is still there. If someone sends money there, what are we supposed to do with that exactly? It gets credited to your account. Is it supposed to route somewhere else?
Yeah, no, you can't do that. And the Bitcoin protocol doesn't let you do it. It's a push system. If someone has your Bitcoin address, they can send Bitcoin to it no matter what.
Yeah, exactly. What am I supposed to do there? I mean, maybe we could. I mean, if their account is frozen and someone sends money there, where is it supposed to go instead? Just send it back to the account that sent it to it? Is that even? I mean, we don't even know the account that it came from, right? Technically, right? So.
Well, you know the Bitcoin address that it came from, but it could have come from like an exchange or something, and that's not even the user's Bitcoin address. So.
Exactly. So what are we supposed to do there? Exactly. You know, destroy that address, and then where does it go?
I don't know. Right.
These are all operational challenges on the ground, guys. If you can figure out these problems, please do let me know. Let me be fully transparent about even more problems. If you go onto my Twitter timeline right now, you'll go on there and see all these people screaming that they got ripped. That means they came with a gift card, and they tried to sell this gift card to someone, usually someone in China. And that guy was like, yeah, man, sorry, the gift card's no good, bro. Cancel the trade. But the gift card was good. But how do we prove that the gift, who was right and wrong in that situation? Because 98% of the gift card programs in the world are run by two sketchy American companies, Blackhawk and Incom, and their ledger is not public. We've tried our best to try to get that. So how do we know which side is telling the truth, especially if the guy with the gift card is brand new and the guy who's buying the gift card for Bitcoin has 10,000 trades? Well, a lot of these, you know, Chinese vendors, I hate to say, they do something called brushing, where they'll do 1,000 trades a day and 5 or 10 of them, they'll just selectively scam. And how do we know who's right and wrong? It's a huge problem. We've been trying our best to stop it. We wanted to get out of the gift card business to do that, but the gift card business has been tremendously successful in onboarding people without bank accounts to Bitcoin. So what are we to do in that case? Cancel gift cards? Well, we came to that agreement in November, but then I got sued because it was too lucrative and my co-founder wanted to keep that money. So here I am online using, hey, Ray, your moderators robbed me, Ray. They're in cahoots with the Chinese. That's not the case, believe me. But I still get accused of being a criminal, which is why I feel great right now that all this is stopping, because people aren't coming at me and calling me a scammer, because I'm not. I'm the only guy in this space that's not a scammer, guys. And I'm trying to do the hard work that no one else, no bank in the world would touch. And it is messy. And I'm trying my best to do right here. Even if you don't like me, if you don't like my haircut, you don't like whatever about me, you don't like my face, at least respect that it is fucking messy, hard work to try to do this. And I have been taking the hits for 8 years to try to make this happen. I'm not trying to get anyone to feel sorry for me. Believe me, it's an honor and a privilege to be able to do what I do. But there are, you know, there are punches you have to take, and I take them every single day. You can go onto my Twitter timeline and see that.
No, look, I mean, it's objectively messy as fuck, specifically on the fiat side. As far as I'm concerned, Bitcoin fixes this. Most of the issues, it's the fiat system is broken, and you have to interact with that from Paxful. The reason we're having this conversation is because of years of mutual respect. And also because, I mean, you could just disappear and not be here right now. So I applaud you for being as transparent as you have been. I mean, I have no idea where you're located. You could just, you know, we'll see what happens with a lot of other people in the space. There you go. And by the way, freaks, to anyone listening to this, there is some background noise on Ray's side. We tried our best. It's an important conversation. He's in a restaurant. So there is a little bit of background noise. I'm not an audio producer. I do all this my own self. So I'll try and clean it up as best as possible, but it's an important conversation regardless. The gift card side is a complete cluster. Like, there's no way to verify if a gift card is spent or when it's spent. There's no way to easily trade those things. So that also does not surprise me at all with what you're saying. I mean, and so basically what you're explaining with the brushing is the way to avoid that is a reputation system. So the smart scammers realized as long as they do like 95% of their trades, honestly, they can get a 5% bump by scamming that 5%. And the reputation system can't protect against that because it looks like they're just a fantastic trade partner, right?
Yeah, and I want to talk about the reputation system because this is really exciting. But first, one of these comments, bro, was absolutely savage. No, they will not. You are a schemer who schemed honest Americans, citizens, to finance war against America. Bro, that's a little rough right there, man. What the hell? Oh, we got some real characters here, bro. Okay, so, yeah, I won't answer that part. But about reputation. I don't know what to say. About reputation, that's huge. So let's look at that, guys. And the reason I bring that up is because, you know, Paxful has a reputation system, which is very valuable. People sell Paxful accounts on the dark web because it's worth money, right? Sometimes they'll do it just so they can start up, you know, with an account that has some reputation and they can do good business. Sometimes people buy it to exit scam. But regardless, reputation is very valuable. So here's what really makes it amazing. With this Civ kit, when it comes out, right, we have the actual genesis for a true credit score, right? It's based on your reputation, which is calculated algorithmically by how many trades you do through a web of trust with other people that do a lot of trades, right? You can start giving people a credit score, right? So someone in Africa, in India, in Latin America, or wherever, that does good business can have a high reputation, and you can use that to basically give them a credit line, right? And then once you solve that problem, it's a simple matter for people to create pools. Whatever. Here's the Kenyan agricultural pool or the Nigerian fintech pool or the Zambian, you know, whatever it is, telco pool. People can put money in there. People can withdraw money from that based on their credit line, and there'll be a certain interest rate payment, right? You can even extend it out further. Perhaps with this Civ kit, we could solve this problem of these, you know, private ledgers, right, of gift cards, and we could let anyone issue their own gift card, right? So any mom and pop shop could issue their own gift card, which is essentially an IOU, right? Yep. And it'd be public. It could be in a public market as well. So they're not redeeming their gift cards. The value of it will go down. They could sell a $100 gift card for a 50% discount, and that essentially sets their interest rate. And a reputation score makes that all possible. That's the beauty here. And that could be phase three of this Civ kit. I really want people to rally around this thing because it is actually possible right now. We can solve every single problem. We know where all the incentivization, you know, axes are. We know how, you know, we know how to bring in oracles in the right way. Because if you think about it, every KYC provider is an oracle. Every dispute moderator is an oracle as well. Right. If you want to have decentralized dispute moderators, you, Matt, could be a dispute moderator. You could say, hey, I'll moderate your dispute and I'll take, you know, 20 basis points for doing so. And that could be a way you could earn money.
0.2%.
20 basis points. Not bad. I pay.
Yeah.
So there's a way to solve every single problem. And that's exciting.
Well, no, I mean, I think the fiat side is fucked. Personally, Ray, I think it's important that it's important that people try and, you know, provide tools and services like you did for so many years to allow people to basically exit the fiat system into Bitcoin. But I mean, I don't think there's any fixing the fiat side of the equation. Like that is that's the issue. The issue is the dollars, the Naira, the Yuan. It's that side. Because Bitcoin allows you to have trust minimized commerce. Like the Bitcoin side works really well.
It does. The escrow is flawless. It's the payment methods that are a problem. And every single payment method has its own idiosyncrasies, right? Whether it's M-Pesa or PayPal. And the beautiful thing about a free market is you'll see the market price in the risk. For example, if you want to buy Bitcoin for PayPal, like one fellow here, Master Yang, he'll charge you 30% or more. And that's because he knows chargeback risk, which he has gotten good at handling. And that's the beauty of a free market. Once we have an unstoppable free market, that's when everything changes. Everyone can trade with everyone for everything. You know, people from an OFAC country can trade with people from another OFAC country. People from America can trade with people from Venezuela, and no one can stop it. Can you imagine the trillions that will be created in value? Look at Africa and India. 3 billion people between them. 2/3 of them are young. That's 2 billion young people. More than half of them, that's over 1 billion people, are unemployed. Why are they unemployed? Because their governments cannot create money to match the amount of potential work that can be done. Because if they do that, you know, the man, quote unquote, the central bankers will say, hey, boy, you can't do that. Slow down. You got to borrow our money at interest. You can't make your money. Otherwise, we'll make your whole country and you a hell of a lot poorer. And that's what happens. Right. All of these economies are strangled. They're all in a deflationary environment because you have all this potential work waiting to be done, but there's no currency, like real currency, honest money to make it happen. And that's why we have to get Bitcoin into these economies. That has proven a challenge, but peer-to-peer has already solved that challenge to a large extent and shown us the light at the end of the tunnel here. We don't have that much more to go.
Yeah, this makes sense. I know we're aligned on this. Ray, I mean, I hope you don't think
someone said we need Satoshi to come back.
We do not need Satoshi to come back. Satoshi fucking crushed it walking away. Satoshi might be here with us today, under a different NIM, and that would be beautiful. But I do not want Satoshi to come back as Satoshi. The beauty of the project is that it's not controlled by any individual or entity. So even if Satoshi came back, they would have no power.
Get sued by Craig Wright immediately.
Yeah, and have like a million fucking missiles pointed at him too. So, I mean, this should be the opposite lesson, in my opinion. This should be another lesson that we've learned over the last fucking year that centralized third parties are security holes. This is a massive vulnerability of our society's institutions in general, and it spills over into Bitcoin, because that's the natural way things work. Of course, we're going to have certain centralized third parties, because that's you know how companies are formed. That's how projects are formed naturally. But we need to see more distributed alternatives. And that's why, I mean, the Nostr thing is super fascinating to me. That makes sense. That's the complete future. But I think ultimately, like, we just go to a circular economy. Like, ultimately, it's, you know, a Nigerian developer is helping me on my website or my project or something, and I'm paying him in Bitcoin. And there's no gift cards involved. These are all stopgaps. All this shit is stopgaps. Important stopgaps for a lot of people around the world, but stopgaps nonetheless, in the path to hyper Bitcoinization, the path to a Bitcoin standard. Ray, you look like you want to say something. You have something you want to say?
Don't get me started, brother. I'll monologue for a whole half hour, bro. I'm ready, I need help.
I'm actually, bro.
I need minds, brother.
Well, balls. I mean, let us know how what we can do to help. I do appreciate that the withdrawals are open.
By the way, guys, if there's some delays with the withdrawals, they're being worked on right now. Just everyone started taking out their money at once, and the
past. Yeah, because you told them to.
Yeah, I told them that it got over. I had no engineers, but I promise you, look, I have not slept. This is being taken care of right now. We had some major wallet issues the week before, too, with BitGo. This time it's not their fault. It's our fault. But I promise you, all the money is there.
With BitGo?
That was last week. We had an issue with BitGo where they helped us. But this week, it's not them. It's all our side, actually.
How is BitGo involved in the wallets?
We use BitGo and Fireblocks for our wallets on this. We use BitGo for the Bitcoin, and we use the Fireblocks for the USDT.
Oh, the shit coins, yeah.
Well, stable coins, yeah.
Well, the stable coins that run on shitcoin networks.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, if you're listening to this conversation, I think this should have gone without saying, but put your withdrawal in at Paxful. Hopefully it will get processed in an orderly manner and soon. It sounds like it will. I think we can all confirm that Ray has not slept. It's pretty obvious from my point of view over here.
Is it the hair, bro?
It's the whole vibe, Ray. It's the whole vibe. It's quite obvious. I
apologize for the vaping. I just need the nicotine right now.
You're good. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Just get people their money. I think we need to bring this up because I'm so. It's interesting, and we'll see how the cards fall and how everything falls, because this is all going to get, this is going to be a long court process, especially all those frozen funds that people are talking about. Nothing happens quickly in fiat world. This is going to be a long, long, long process. But one thing I've noticed, and it's very common on the internet in our social media age, is that as soon as there's a little bit of sign of weakness, there's a lot of calls to cancel individuals and take down individuals, and maybe slander is the wrong word, but go after their reputations, which is, let's be honest, at the end of the day, time is scarce. What do we have besides our reputation? We have our Bitcoin, we have our family, we have our reputation. That is the ultimate quantification or way to quantify someone's existence in this world is their reputation. And what I've seen recently is there's this article that is floating around about you in Miami. I think it's 2015, 2016. And I think an AR-15 was involved. You're on a balcony with an AR-15 or something like that. Do you want to talk about this, or am I out of line asking you this question?
No, but you just opened up a whole can of worms, so now you're going to get it, brother. So get ready, bro. Set aside 15 minutes.
Let's fucking go.
All right, so it was me and three other guys that worked for Paxful. One of them was my co-founder. One of them was our CTO. And I was sitting there in an apartment we rented, an Airbnb, on Collins Avenue in Miami. And I was sitting there reading the science book, Man or Matter by Layers. I was having a real powerful moment. And, all of a sudden I hear, snipers in position. I'm like, what? Someone playing a joke or something? Some kid with a walkie-talkie? I look around like, I forget about it. And then all of a sudden, I go back to read my book, and then I hear a knock at the door. It wasn't a knock, actually. It was just a yell. Police, open the door! I'm like, oh, man. What's going on? I was actually in my underwear, and I was wearing these little briefs, American flag briefs. So I get up, and I'm like, okay, I don't think that was a joke. So I get up real slowly, I put down my book, and I say, I'm walking towards the door. So I walk towards the door, my hands are up, because I thought there actually were snipers in position, and yes, there were snipers in position. I open the door with one hand and my hand up, and I announce I'm opening the door. And what do I see? I see a guy standing in front of me with a SWAT team cap and a gun pointed right in my face. And he screams, get down. I'm like, yes, sir. and I get down as slowly as I can with my hands above my head. I'm basically naked here, except for my little Captain America speedos. So I get down, they rush in, start kicking me while I'm down, which I thought was quite funny. I was like, wow, this is actually fucking happening. Then they zip tie me and make me crawl on my belly outside. Outside the apartment. And I scream the whole time. I tell them, hey, there's just a bunch of nerds in here. They're asleep. And I yell out to the guys. They were asleep in the other room, the three of them. Come out carefully. I was worried about them. Because I was in a very dangerous situation over there. Because you have to understand, when that opened the door and that first guy was staring me right in the eyes with a gun. He had a gun pointed right to me. And that was scary.
Yep.
But what was really scary was the look he gave. He was looking at me with fear in his eyes. When a man is pointing a gun in your face and he's afraid, that's a very scary situation to be in. I've had guns pointed at me before. When someone is scared of pointing a gun at you, you're going to get shot. So thankfully, thanks be to God, I did not. Everyone else came quiet. They searched the apartment. They found a legally purchased AR-15, which was purchased because me and these guys were going, we did a road trip across America, starting in Las Vegas, all the way down to Miami. We went to shooting ranges all around the United States, just shooting guns.
Right.
And one of the guys bought a gun, and we were going to go the next day to be trained to a shooting range by, I forget the guy's name, Mark Cohen or something, former SWAT team officer, actually. And we thought it'd be a good investment. They confiscated that gun. They took us all to the police station, which is right across the street behind Collins Avenue. They interrogated us all. And I was wondering what happened. So finally, they let us out. That was hell, though, trying to get someone to bail us out of there. We went to this one correctional facility, which is considered one of the worst in America. We were there for 8 hours. By some miracle, I managed to get through to my friend. Get us out. And it was hard because all we had were these numbers. I didn't remember any numbers in this smartphone age. And I had to beg this bail officer to reach out to my friend on the internet and that he could help us. And I was telling him, yeah, I'm not broke. I can pay you. He's like, everyone says that. Anyway, my friend actually got us bailed out. They let us out onto the street with no money, no phones, no computer, no ID, none. Here's what happened. My co-founder and that former CTO, the guy with one eye, these clowns got on the roof. We were on a penthouse. They were outside walking around, posing with the AR-15 with baklavas on their head, taking Instagram photos. And someone from a lower floor caught one of the pictures and sent it to the media. And bro, it looked real scary. It looked like a guy only saw from the waist up, a guy with a roof with a gun like this with a baklava on his head. And what can you imagine what happened? This got to the cops, did the background check. They saw me there with a Semitic name and a bunch of Russians, you know, and they're like, fuck, it's Muslims and Russians with guns. And he came in, gangbusters. They shut down two city blocks. They actually had snipers in position because these two fucking clowns decided to be posing on the fucking roof with an AR-15 and baklavas, thinking they were fucking Rambo, bro.
Holy shit.
And dude, all the charges were dropped. It was just a bunch of fucking bullshit. You know, it was the media that started it up.
Right.
And everything dropped, you know, a month afterwards. But, you know, it was honestly, it was one of the scariest times of my life. And we had to recover from that. And I've been running from one contingency to the next for the past 5 years with my co-founder and these guys. You have to understand, I probably started Paxil when I was homeless, bro. I had a really hard journey up until then. I'm actually writing a book about it all. And, you know, I took the talent that I could find. And these guys were some jokers. They did stupid shit.
Right.
But thanks be to God, I managed to actually recover from that. So that's just one story, bro. There's other stories like that, which are, you know, even crazier, honestly. The shit that I had to deal with. And that's why I feel so free right now. Because I don't have to deal with any of this bullshit. I feel like a huge weight has been lifted off my shoulders. I remember one of the Reddit posts. When this thing happened, and one of them was so funny. It's like, these guys are living the life, living the American dream. They're heroes. That wasn't the case, but there you go, bro. That was the Miami Gate incident. And by the way, the police, after that incident, they were referring to me as Captain America in the police station.
Because the underwear.
There's actually a video of me walking out with the Speedos, and I had a six pack there too, man. I was looking real good. There you go, man. You just got
is
it.
Is that video on the internet?
I can't hear you.
I said, is that video on the internet?
You I don't
still
know.
Can't hear me?
Sorry, I think my. I don't think that video's on the. I can try to find it.
That means. It's just a question. Okay, well, thank you for going into that. I mean, that there was something in that news article about drugs as well, but they dismissed the whole case, sounds like.
Yeah, they did. They dropped all charges and everything. I did have some hash on me, which I legally bought from Boulder, Colorado.
Right.
And some gummy bears.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, thank you for the transparency on that. I mean, that I had never seen that story until yesterday when all this stuff was already going down. I mean, this has been a great conversation. I appreciate you coming on. Is there anything else you want to touch on? I mean, you said there's other stories. You want to tell us any other stories? Or
I don't want to tell you any more stories about these idiots. They're just man. I mean, look, bro. You got to understand, my co-founder was a fucking moron, and everyone tried to play him against me, and I've been fighting this internal fucking Cersei-like Game of Thrones for the past 2 years, and for me, so, that's extremely draining, you know.
This co-founder you talk about in the Miami situation, that's the co-founder that's suing you right now, right? Is the same guy?
Yep, same guy.
It's like Andy something, right?
You I don't really want to say his name. It's Arthur
okay. But we'll...
He's just a degen, you know.
Oh yeah, I got his name wrong. I just checked. I said his name wrong. Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up this show?
Yeah, brothers. You can see by the look on my face, I'm extremely happy right now. Yeah, the only real bummer here is that I still have to stay as the CEO of Paxil just to make sure everything is secure and locked down. I would love to just quit now, but you know there are customer funds in play. Those frozen accounts are the only thing that I haven't really figured out right now. You know, we've made these 7 buckets, and none of them we can really release. But, you know, I'm working with our compliance officer to try to do what we can. But we have no compliance resources. So you refuse to pay any of the compliance people to keep working on. I think it's just $900,000 of frozen funds that are left. This very little I can do about that in the situation. We're just trying to get a custodian in to do that. So trust me, I'm doing the best I can, guys, but your money is there. I have not touched your money. It is not with me. I hope that one day those funds will be freed up. There might be a miracle happen, but when it comes to regulators, I don't know, but it's not, you know, that money is not with me. That money is set aside.
So 900,000. That's how much is frozen right now over there?
Yeah, they're like $917,000 in 7 different buckets, ranging from like severe OFAC stuff to
got it
stuff to this little chain analysis, you know, shit. But none of it I can really overrule as a CEO of an American company, for sure. However, onto the bright side, you can see by the smile on my face that I'm very happy right now. We're in a very special time in human history. Dollar hegemony is on the wane. In fact, it is collapsing before our very eyes. All the BRICS nations are gathering together to unite and unite the global south. Our job in this space is, you know, we've done a great job at hodling, right? That's been a huge defense mechanism. It's been worked very, very well. But now we need to make sure those sats flow, right? Those sats flow among the people. Unstoppable free markets is the promise. It's the reason why the internet, mobile phones, and Bitcoin was created. This is what we need to complete the project. Free trade creates wealth. Can't have free trade without free payments. And once people can discover and share liquidity with each other and trade with each other using the best form of sound money that humanity has, Bitcoin, we will have victory. All the global south, meaning the people, the streets, will come together. Now that the governments are coming together, great, but they don't move fast enough. We can move a lot faster. This SIF kit is coming soon. I will dedicate the rest of my life to be building on top of it. I will be hopefully soon a free agent as a CEO. And I will take a job from any company that is going to be dedicated to building on top of this system and has a heart. Unstoppable free markets is right before our eyes, guys. We don't have much more to go. However, we don't really have much more time either. This window is closing right now. And that's the thing that really bugs me. You know, we don't have much more time, guys. We're in a very special time in human history now, where these small castes of dominant men that rule the world have gotten so vain that they believe they can finally pull this switch. And this switch is, they're basically going to drop this mask of guise, tyranny, democracy, and they're going to show us their real face. They're going to introduce a system, a matrix, where escape isn't just impossible, it's unthinkable. And we have to race ahead of that. And the more wealth we can create through free trade, through unstoppable free markets, all this stuff that we're building, the faster we can move and upend them. So the West would just be a decaying zombie trying to take down the whole world with it. And the rest of the world will be moving forward. It's possible. And it's happening right now. And I'm calling for help. Whoever wants to help me with this, can't do it myself. Help a brother out. I promise you, it'll be a fun ride.
Well said at the end there, Ray. I just want to thank you again for joining us. I want to thank all the freaks to joining us in the live audience and who continue to support the show by going to SILDispatch.com/donate, where you can support with Bitcoin or using Podcasting 2.0 apps. Ray, to you, I want to say, I wish you luck in this next venture, this next chapter. If you want to come back on Dispatch as a follow-up at some point in the future, let me know. We would love to have you back on. I hope everyone at Paxful, all the customers at Paxful, get their money back, including the people that have their accounts frozen. Those frozen accounts is going to take quite a while, though, so batten down the hatches. If you're going to get your money back, it's, you know, you got to have Uncle Sam's permission. That lines up. And is unfortunate. So with all that said, I just want to thank Ray again for joining us and being transparent. I hope he's able to get some sleep at the end of this week. And to everyone who's had trouble with this whole Paxful situation, I hope you start to realize that it's up to you. It's up to you. I know. I'm not trying to victim blame. I don't want to be the person who's telling people that lost their money that they have to figure things out. But it's up to all of us to take our own future into our own hands and learn how to use Bitcoin in a freedom-oriented way, to learn how to hold your own keys, learn how to use your own node, constantly be humble enough to realize that we can improve our skills and get better at using this new technology. Because no one is going to save us. There's no one out there will save you. We have to save ourselves. That is the only way forward. Our institutions are corrupt. They are broken. This whole system is completely fucked up. And fortunately, there's freedom tech to give us hope. But you have to use the tools. You have to figure out how to use the lifeboat. No one's going to push you on the lifeboat and guide you to safety. You have to figure it out yourself. If you're ready to figure it out yourself, I'm here to help you figure it out. And until next time, I love you all. Thank you, Ray. And stay humble, stack sats. Cheers.
Thanks, Matt. No one's going to save us.
Appreciate you.